Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2. I'm your host, KJ Allison. My co-host, Neruda, won't be on this episode. And reason for that, so this episode is going to be a project that I did for school, my social justice studies capstone. And I was just going to use it as a project, but the conversations that I was having, the issue that I'm talking about, I felt it was too important and really relevant to the podcast to, you know, just keep it underground or gatekeep it. Really good information. So how this episode is I'm going to talk about the lack of diversity in Division III, specifically in head coaching. If you look at the numbers, I mean, almost 30% of the conferences in Division III have no Black Division III head coaches. And if that's not interesting or disturbing enough for you, almost 50% have only one Black head coach in their conference. So there's a clear diversity issue. And I was just kind of curious, like, why this is, how this came about. So I did a lot of research, and how the episode actually works is I talk with three different head coaches, head coach at Springfield, head coach at North Park, head coach at Framingham, and we had really, really good conversations, and RIT, my bad, shout out Coach Parker, but four coaches and really good conversations. You learn something different about each of them and what they think about this issue, but I'm going to talk about the research first and then give you a little introduction into each person, what I took away from the episode. I mean, when I say I took something from it, like, they're really intelligent guys with interesting perspectives and definitely something to keep in mind when you're looking at the Division III landscape, how it's changing, but also, you know, like the historical impact on, you know, Division III. And we see in college sports change so often that this issue is definitely apparent in my head, but it should be apparent to, you know, a lot of people. And hopefully this raises some eyes to this issue to kind of change this lack of diversity. So I'm going to talk about the research first. I don't want to bore too many people, so I'm going to say a little about the research, but kind of tie it into real life. And quick caveat that when I'm looking through the research, there's not many articles. We know Division III doesn't get the proper media and research done on the division. So there's a lot of research supporting like Division I or professional leagues that I'm going to kind of, you can tie those informations into Division III because it's relevant for all sports leagues or sports divisions. So first thing I want to talk about, racial bias in hiring. And this is something I talked about with all coaches, but we have to think about that we all as humans hold our own biases, right? And what I find interesting is that Black people don't have the opportunity to be biased because they're not holding any of these positions. So when we talk about the hiring process, and you're going to hear an interesting story from a coach, but when we talk about the hiring process, it's a lot of not what you know, but who you know. And who you know, usually in a lot of these Division III institutions, are white people. And throughout this whole episode, I'm not trying to make it seem like being a white head coach is bad or it's bad for the division. I'm just showing that there's lack of diversity. So when we're talking about the hiring process, the people that are making the decisions and that are biased towards their own people are people that are white. So that's the first reason why, you know, Black people aren't sitting in these head coaching roles, is because when we're going through the hiring process, we're looking up and we're seeing white people on white people on white people. And like I said, it's not a bad thing. Next point I want to talk about, and this article is called Whiteliness and Institutional Racism, Hiding Behind Unconscious Bias. So I talk about, like, as humans, we're just biased, but the article is basically presenting the idea that we're hiding behind this unconscious, in quotes, thought process. And, like, to be honest about it, it's just racism or it's discriminatory practices, but we're just hiding behind unconscious bias and making it seem like, oh, that it's okay. Like, there's nothing we can really do about it, but there's plenty of things we can do, whether it's trainings, whether it's more DEI hirings, even in the upper positions, not even just like chief diversity officer. Like there's DEI hirings for that, but there's not for, you know, the higher positions that we see. So that's an interesting concept of that I never really thought about, but it's true. Like you hear all the time, like unconscious bias, but when are we going to switch our mindset from unconscious to it's just racism? Like the system is racist, or the hiring practices are racist, or favor different people. I think that change of mindset needs to be talked about more. Another article I read, Race and Employment, the Historical Case of Head Coaches in College Basketball. And this was the only article that I could find that actually talked specifically about Division III. So Division III is odd because compared to the other divisions where there's scholarships and stuff like that, more media, more attention, Division III doesn't get that. So that's the first reason why, you know, there's maybe not that big of interest in Division III. I will say that. But Division III was added or implemented into the division after Division I, Division II. Some people might not even know that. So before, there was like everybody just had to either pick Division I, Division II. But now Division III kind of opened up. And I don't know if you guys can see this when you're watching Division III game, or if you don't know about Division III, like I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of white people in Division III. So the reason why this is because it was implemented after. But Black people that are known, like we are known to be better at basketball, those people stayed at Division I, Division II. But Division III kind of opened a pipeline for white athletes to compete. And this is a great thing, like offering another division. I wouldn't be playing basketball right now if there wasn't this division. So I'm not trying to say it's a bad thing, but I'm just showing that this is why there's a lot of white people in the division compared to Black people. And it's odd, again, because the statistics show that most black students are found in Division III institutions, right? But there's the least amount of Black athletes in the division. So it's like contradicting that we're seeing the most people at these schools, but we're not seeing the most people playing at these universities. And why this is important is because we know that most coaches are former players. I don't know the exact statistic, but it was a really high number of former players getting hired at their school or in their division. So if there's not that many Black athletes playing in this division, that already slims the numbers down of how many Black head coaches are in the pool, if you know what I mean. So, and there's another scenario of why this is, because Division III is, in quotes, I don't personally agree with this, but the least competitive. There's a focus on academics and not, you know, scholarships or performance. So I think one of the coaches talked about how, like, you hear Division III and you're automatically saying, no, I'm not going to get involved with that. Like, it goes against the basketball focus. It's focusing too much on academics and ETC. But it's like eventually we have to kind of start teaching our youth and our, like, just young kids, people my age and younger, that like it's good to play Division III. I'm playing basketball at a really high level, and that narrative's changing, that it's not just scrubs playing basketball. It's really good hoopers, and you're able to set your future up greatly. Like, you can. There's so many good institutions. I mean, you talk about the NESCAC, Ivy League type of league. You talk about, you know, some of the top schools, the top private schools in the world are Division III institutions. So I definitely think that this research is important to understand, because it's also tying into a larger topic about why there's a need for Division III coaches to be Black. And like I said, like, being a white coach, some of the best coaches in the world are white. But if you think about why there needs to be Black coaches, I was talking to a friend that said, like, every staff needs at least one black coach, especially if you have any Black players, because it does make you feel a little bit at ease in your mind. Like, you're looking at the sideline and you see somebody that you, naturally, like I said in the beginning, like, you have your own biases. You trust your people more than you trust somebody else. Just That's how we've been socialized. That's historical context. All of that goes into it. But there's an actual effect on players, their actions, how they play. And it might not be, you can't really test this, but it's just a known, I don't want to say fact because you can't prove it, but there's a lot of strong evidence because the coach holds the power over their actions. And I talk about all this in the episode with the coaches, but like when you think about protesting through sport or, you know, playing outside of a system, like you have to think about who can kind of take this away from me or who can take my right to do this. And you have to realize or recognize that the coach holds a lot of the power over the players when they're thinking about these decisions. So the research backs all of this up, and it just still really shocks me that we're in 2025 now and there's very few Black coaches at all divisions. It's not just Division III, but I wanted to focus on Division III because there's less research out there about it. But that's the research, and I don't mean to step on anyone's toes or make this an uncomfortable conversation, but I do think that it's needed, and I hope you guys appreciate that. But I'm gonna get into who I talk to, and we'll go from there. You can hear their perspective on this issue, what they think about it, how this has come to be, and I'm gonna talk a little about like why I respect their perspectives. All right, so the first coach we talked with, Coach Dominic Parker, currently head coach at RIT, just finished his first year with the Tigers. Really good coach, really interesting basketball mind. But what I took away from talking with Coach Parker, first thing is RIT is special. It's a special program, but school as a whole, and respect to their AD for wanting a minority head coach. But they used to search for him. And there's a lot of benefits, which we talked about with Coach Parker, to why you should use a search firm. But the only drawback is it's really expensive. But I was thinking, like, a lot of these schools in Division III, they have money. Like, you talk about some of the top schools around Division III, they have the money to implement things like a search firm. So that's something that I feel like more often than not should be used when we're doing a hiring process. Interesting discussion to be had for a different episode. But another thing is Coach Parker mentioned briefly, like, looking out for others. And first thing I want to say is multiple coaches mentioned that to me. Like, they're in this position now as a Black head coach. They have to, you know, kind of be on top of their game to ensure that there's a pipeline of Black coaches getting into the game. But it's interesting that, like, white coaches don't really have to think about things like that. It's already destined that, you know, your next coach is going to be white. So that's just something that, like, taking away from the X's and O's time that they're able to spend focusing on X's and O's, they have to worry about, like, oh, did I represent myself good enough so that, you know, tomorrow or my next job, they think of me this way, or when I leave this job, are they going to want another Black head coach? So I find that really interesting, but it's special in the Black community, the support that they have in the basketball world. So let's hear from Coach Parker. We are here with Coach Parker. How you doing today, Coach?
I'm good, man.
So I want to talk a little about you. So you just finished your first year at RIT, your first role as a head coach, and I'm just kind of curious about, like, the hiring process for you. If you could talk about, like, how you found out about the opening, how you, like, a lot of getting a head coaching job is networking. So just, like, sure, how you got that, and then the interview process as a whole.
Yeah, man. So it's unique, man. I've actually interviewed for 8 different head coaching jobs. Mm. Every experience was different. The unique one about RIT is that they used a search firm. Mm. You know, the search firm's process was definitely different than a normal process like I said, RIT was, you know, fortunate enough to get a search firm. Search firms are expensive. And the cool thing about this firm is they was hiring a men's coach and a women's coach at the same time.
Oh, and so, they got the Fisher coach.
Yeah, they got Coach Melissa, man. She's awesome. Like, they coach of the year one. Like, she's awesome. So, so both of those processes was happening at the same time. And I think my AD, she did a search firm just because the search firm's process is a little quicker than, you know, other processes that might have, because you got to wait for HR and different things like that. But the search firms can kind of expedite stuff and get stuff done within like 30 days. So,
No, that's a crazy process, bro. And one thing the search firm I was thinking about, it might be the way to go, just because like all the human biases are kind of like eliminated at that point.
Yeah.
Because it's strictly like what your resume look like. It's not who do you know or whose 100%. Friend are you, stuff like that.
I think what the search firm did is they met with her, the AD Jackie, and she basically said she wanted a criteria, you know? And so, you know, they asked around guys who fit that criteria and kind of fed through stuff. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to get the job, and it was some really good candidates from what I heard. So I'm definitely blessed to be able to represent this institution and be the head men's basketball coach here.
I noticed that you've coached under some like pretty legends, John Kerkorian at CNU, a winner, Coach Palumbo we was talking about off air, winner at Guilford. But more what I'm curious about is you've been involved with, those are white coaches, nothing against them, like they win, they're great people. But I was wondering, like, now you're in a head coaching role, how have you seen the like shift maybe of like connection between black to white players, if you have any insight behind that?
Yeah, man, one thing about it, man, I you know, and like those guys, like Coach Palumbo and Coach K, which we call them, you know, they don't necessarily see color, man. They see good ball players, and they treat everybody the same, you know. So for me, you know, they just want guys that's going to help them win, you know. You could be green, yellow, it don't matter, you know what I mean? So, you know, at the end of the day, learning from those guys is they've taught me that no one's bigger than the program. And also, too, that they give everybody a chance. And everybody has a legit chance to get playing time and earn playing time. So that's something that I've taken here. And the cool thing about it, man, and just and I can speak on this. So when I got to Christopher Newport years ago, I did two stints. I did a stint. It was I want to say it was like 2017 to 2019. Right. So I'm gonna be honest, man, like I was a good recruiter. You know, I still had a lot to learn in terms of the coaching piece. I told Coach K, I said, he asked me, he said, what do you want from this? I said, Coach, I want to be a Division I assistant. Like, I wanted to play D1. I didn't play D1 when I was coming out. I played D2 ball, but I wanted to be a D1 assistant. So he said, man, like, I'm going to have to groom you to get that, you know. And I remember this, man, and to this day, it's something that sits with me. We had our first staff meeting at CNU. And I'm sitting in a chair like this, like, you know what I mean? Just like, you know, he texted me. He said, man, he said, sit up straight. Like, he basically said, he said, look, man, like, you're a minority. Like, you're going to be looked at differently. And he said, it's wrong. But he showed me that, like, hey, man, like, you got to be tight and your stuff has to be a little bit better than the average person, you know. And for me, that was real. And then for me, it was like, you know what? This guy wants to see me move and go on, you know, because other people would have just, you know, he can recruit, he can get me good players, whatever. I don't care what he is. But, you know, like he taught me, you know, going out and just, you know, make sure that you're dressed nice and you're well clep up, you're clean and things of that nature, man. So, you know, that right there kind of told me that, like, in this business, just being a minority, that sometimes your stuff has to be a little bit tighter than your other counterparts, just because, you know, they are looking at you a certain way. Like for me here, I'm the first minority head coach at the school ever.
Wow.
So for me, it's just like, you know, and if I'm here for 40 years, great, and have a good career, but I want the next person to come after me to have a chance, and I don't want to mess it up for the next person because it's, you know, I don't want them to say, hey, look, you know, he wasn't a good coach, blah, 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 this and that. So, you know, that's a task that I gotta you know, that I was given, that I you know, I want to see everybody for the future generations be able to get into my spot and go even further. So that was a story that for me, man, that really was like, okay. And I really had to kind of sharpen up how I dressed and how I talked and how I did a lot of different things. So definitely thankful for him for that.
Yeah, that's powerful, especially like, I don't know if this is true, but I feel like a lot of white coaches wouldn't feel like they have the right to say something like that. Like,
for sure,
keep it a buck. Like, you're a minority, you have to kind of be a little bit different, as unjust as that is. He was just looking out for you, and that's super big time by him. And that's kind of like underrated stories that separates coaches like that. Like you said at the beginning, they're not even seeing color, but they understand that there is a difference. So that's cool. But this is the last thing I want to talk about. But I mean, we kind of mentioned it, but just more like, what are some solutions you think we can implement in the division, or, you know, in the hiring process to decrease this gap between, like, I'm looking at all the conferences and what their race of the head coaches are, and there's like one or two maybe in each conference that have as a black coach. So just talk about that.
I think it is, man. What I think it is we have to get people interested in the lower levels. You know, everybody wants to be the highest level. I get it. You know, parts of me still want to get to that level. You know, if I'm, you know, if I'm blessed enough to get to there, you know, great. But if not, you know, I got a really good job, you know, and, you know, I'm making my own hours. I got a 11th month old daughter that I can go get. I can go get her right now from daycare. She's in daycare on campus. So like, I think honestly, man, just educating guys on what it is. Cause when a lot of people, I bring up the D3, they're like, I ain't doing that. It's D3. But D3 is probably the purest brand of basketball
now. 100%.
You know what I mean? Like, the guys I have on my team, they're working out because they love and they want to get better. Like, I don't got no NIL money. You know, I don't got $100,000 to give. You know, so it's a pure brand of basketball, which I love. But I think it's just educating people on what it is. A lot of people don't know. They just hear D3, oh, they don't offer no scholarships. Like, I don't, you know, I ain't going to mess with it. But, like, to be honest with you, man, like, a lot of my guys that I'm recruiting this year have got Division II offers, and they got more money from us than they did their Division II school. You know what I mean? So just, you know, I get it. Like, you want to go to the highest level. I lived it. Like, I wanted to play Division I ball. I wasn't good enough. I went D2. That was the right level for me. I played D2 ball and had a decent career. And then, but just like, I think just educating on what D3 is and what it can give you. One thing I will say is, in my opinion, some of the Division III schools are some of the best educational schools in the country.
No, facts.
You know, like, I think the top five academic schools, MIT is one, that's D3. Mm-hmm. I want to say Williams is fifth, that's D3. I mean, you got Yale and Penn, you know, schools like that's Division I. But like, a lot of these schools are academically can set you up for, you know, life after your sport. Yeah. Not saying those other schools don't do that, but I know for me, just seeing it firsthand, I got nine seniors. I mean, I got nine seniors who, I mean, these guys are going to be making six figures. They'll be making more money than me starting out, you know? And that's because of the testament of this place and the education that you get and the investment that you get back from graduating from a place like RIT. So I think just educating people. And then also, too, I think another thing that could help is, for me, man, like, I'm an open book. Like, I'm willing to help whoever, you know? And there's a lot of people that look like me that's not trying to help. You know, and that's it's kind of messed up, but like, I'm not like that.
So the next coach we'll hear from, Coach Donald Morris Jr., currently the head coach at Framingham State. Just finished his fourth season there, but he's been a head coach since 2007. So it's cool to get like that historical background of, you know, maybe how the hiring process has changed. We talk about that. But what I really like about talking with Coach Morris, and this one was a little bit shorter than talking with Coach Parker, but still really good content. He mentioned, you know, like, black people being thrown in this, being good recruiters. And I just want to talk about that real quick because, you know, it makes sense. Like, black coaches are able to relate to black players more. Like I said in the intro, you're more comfortable and you can be at ease with yourself when you have a black coach. So it makes sense, you know, why people think black people are good recruiters. But it's a drawback because now we're getting thrown into these boxes of, you know, we can't see the game at a high level. We can just relate to the kids or the athletes. So it's good that they're given that recognition of being good recruiters, but it does come with a little bit of stigma behind that too. Another thing is him, we talked about like him imploring his son to meet people in power that are Black. And this is really important, especially like I try to look at that the same way of, you know, when I see somebody position of power that's Black, like that helps me because you can see yourself in that role. Like that's something big. If you don't see yourself or people that look like you in roles of power, it's hard to imagine yourself in positions of power. And there was one more thing I wanted to talk about is the reason why I cut Coach Parker's part off when he was talking about, you know, like looking out for others is because Coach Morris talked about it a lot in this episode. So I'm not going to say too much about it. Let's hear from Coach Morris. We are here with Coach Morris. How you doing today, Coach?
Doing well.
So I was curious, though, like, so that was 2007 you got the job?
I'll be around there, 2007, 2008, somewhere around that time.
So I'm curious, like, do you think that the hiring process changed at all? I know you said, like, through different divisions and stuff, it's relatively the same, but do you think it's changed at all, like, allowing minorities to get their foot in the door more, or it's relatively the same from when you first got it?
You know, that's always been the challenging question. You know, there's only, to be honest, if you go from the Northeast all the way to Pennsylvania, as of right now, there's only 12 minority head coaches out of, like, 78 colleges. So as much as I want to say that the opportunities are there, sometimes I don't think they are. I think that when people look at minority coaches, they think we're really good recruiters, that we get kids to come to school, you know, we can go into certain areas and pull them out, and we relate to them well. So I do think there's a plethora of minority coaches that are capable of being head coaches, you know, and they should be getting those opportunities. Whether they will or not, we hope that will change. But you would think with a sport that has so many people of different colors playing it, that there will be many people of different colors coaching it.
Okay, so the MASCAC, and it was Al Pettaway's first year in the conference, but before that, I was like, it's still just majority of white coaches. So I'm curious how it is for you, like coaching that conference, trying to have your own identity, making connections with them. Just talk about like from a majority of your career being the sole Black coach in the league.
You know, my relationship with all the coaches has been great because I've known them beyond the time at Framingham. You know what I mean? As a youth growing up, because some of them have been there a long time, or whether it was when I worked at other colleges. So we've always had a great relationship and a great respect for each other. You know, being the only Black coach, you know, it's tough at times. Do you know what I mean? You know, you love to see more people of color. It's great that Coach Pettaway got the job. That was one of the first things I said to him when I saw him in our game. I said, it's great to see another man of color on the sideline. And even with myself, like I told you, I got a four-year-old son. So what I try to do anytime we play teams or this situation where we see people of color in a higher power, I try to bring my son to introduce him to those people because I see that so that he understands later on in life, okay, I see people that are in higher positions of my color. I can also be in the same position as them.
But so obviously like there's a diversity issue in Division III and most of the conferences that I'm looking at, but I was curious, like what you think. I mean, we kind of talked about it already, like, it's the institution's not allowing minorities to put their foot in. But I was curious if you have just any extra thoughts about why there's such a big discrepancy between white coaches versus Black coaches in Division III.
One of the things that I noticed too at times is that even with the coaches we have that are of color, some of them don't have enough assistant coaches of color. And, you know, for us to be pushing a race and a culture forward, we have to be putting people in position to push them forward. So sometimes it can be the fact that, you know, a lot of these assistant coaches that may not have any minority coaches on their staff. And are those coaches saying, listen, what can we do now to help this coach, you know, exceed and go to the next level? You know, so even if I see a coaching staff and, you know, they may have one person of color on their staff, what I'm asking myself is, okay, when they finish this year, what are you doing to move the needle for them so that they can progress and get the next job? And where sometimes I feel like they put them in these roles and they stick them in these roles and they keep them there. And the more they can keep them at that level, they never really try to progress and they stay that assistant for a very long time. Where I think in any case, in any situation, even if you have the best assistant in the world, you should be saying to yourself, what can I do to better him to help him get to the next level? Especially when we have, you know, minority assistant coaches that are looking for those opportunities.
Now we're going to hear from Coach Mike McLennan. He's the head coach at Springfield College, just finished his third season there. And this was a really, really powerful conversation. I mean, Coach McLennan was super authentic and natural with what he was saying. And some of what he's saying might offend some people. Like, yes, it is hard to be a Black head coach in New England. Like, even if New Englanders don't want to hear that, it's hard. Yes, the people that I'm recruiting and the people that best fit my coaching style are Black players. And like that's just what it is. And like I said, it might step on some people's toes, but you got to respect a coach that can be authentic like that. So I appreciate Coach McLennan for that. But he mentioned something that was really interesting. I never thought about this double standard of, you know, like you can look at a Division III institution or even a high school Division I, any level, and see an all-Black roster and not be surprised at all that they're led by a white coach. That's just how it's always been. But it's interesting that like a community, like a high school community, would feel really offended if a all-white school, all-white community was led by a Black head coach. So it's now we're seeing it's not even just like administration or, you know, the hiring practice. It really goes deeper into a whole different level of a whole society that influences this issue that we continue to talk about. But I like his perspective, Coach McLennan's perspective on just like as Black people, oftentimes we get so caught up in inequality this, inequality that. That's why I can't do the A, B, and C. But it's like, when are we going to throw that out the way and realize, yes, you're starting behind, but you also have the capability. And we've seen our ancestors, we've seen past generations deal with these inequalities and still make great things of themselves. So when are we going to throw these excuses out the window and just keep moving forward? So, I mean, I really, really like this conversation. You probably might take away the most from this conversation, but let's hear from Coach Mike McLennan. All right, we are here with Coach McLennan. Did I say it right?
Yeah, you got it.
How you doing today, Coach?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here, man. Thank you. You sent me that email. You know, I quickly obviously looked you up and seen the great things you've been doing, man. So, you know, I'm excited to be a part of this and a part of what you're growing and building. I'm excited for this.
Appreciate that, Coach. I was actually pretty surprised at some of the feedback, not feedback, but responses I got, just because usually I was telling somebody the other day, like, if I send, let's say, like 10 emails to coaches just randomly saying, like, try and get on the pod, maybe I'll get like two or three responses. But when I texted the brothers, like, this is what I'm doing, everybody responded like they'd be more than happy. So I appreciate all the support for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we got to support each other, you know what I mean? And any business, podcast business, coaching business, you know, if you don't have that support from your own, and it becomes tough, you know, because it can be a crab in a barrel type situation where everybody's trying to get their own and no one's really looking out for each other. So anything I could do for young up and coming entertainers, athletes, whatever the case may be, I want to be able to help.
I appreciate that. That's love. But I want to go to like a little bit different question. So community college, that's where you previously coached, and that's a lot different basketball than, you know, like Division III. At least from my perspective, it's a lot more. I don't want to get too stereotypical, but there's probably a lot more colored people there. So the athleticism is different. The pace is different. I'm just curious, like, how did you adjust your style coming from JUCO to Division III, if you had to switch it at all?
Yeah, I think at the JUCO level, whether it's D1 JUCO, D2 JUCO, you know, you have a smaller timetable with your athletes, you know. So if you are trying to, you know, progress them and you have the purpose of saying, hey, in a year or two, I got to get you ready to go to that next level. Your approach is making them accountable. Like, look, we don't have a lot of time. We can't sit here and say, oh, I was under recruited, oh, and complain about this and complain. We got to get to work. And when you say you have a lot of disenfranchised kids who come to JUCO, it is true. And it's true because either they got overlooked or because of their, color or their community they come from, they might not got recruited. So they go JUCO and they have a point to prove. But it's up to me to strip all that victim blaming away. You know, for me at the JUCO level, I had to tell those kids, look, it's all about where we're trying to go forward. We can't think about what happened, the under recruited or the unfairness you felt you got. We now got to focus on how can we get in a year or two, you needing to go where you need to. We got to hit the books, right? Because a lot of times those kids come to JUCO because they didn't meet the grade in high school. 100%. And then you have other kids who are just under recruited. So we got to strip all that away. And we kind of got to start from the beginning when you're in JUCO. And you have to put together a timetable that fits those 2 years. So there's a lot of work you got to do in between. Now, at the JUCO level, I have my opportunity to work with these kids a lot more in the summer and the springs, which is a good thing because you can progress them and get them ready a lot earlier. But when I got to being a head coach at the D3 level, you know, I had to take a step back because now I can develop them over 4 years. But now the next part was, okay, how can I get this same young men to come to a four-year school that probably if I wasn't a head coach wouldn't be able to come to this four-year school. Mm. My approach and my change had to be a little different. And, you know, I found it at first a little nerve-wracking just because in New England, it's just a different type of basketball. And I'm not from this area. So, you know, I had to get accustomed to that before I went out and recruited the type of kids that I know can play for me. And once I figured out and I found that rhythm, it started to help me get the classes I got the last 2 years, which is, you know, some kids who probably wouldn't be here if I wasn't the head coach, not because the former coach wouldn't recruit them, but it just didn't fit the type of player he wanted. Yeah. And the type of player I want looks a little bit more like me, you know, and it's not just because they can play better. It's just because they fit my style better. Yeah. Now, we just got to commit from a kid from Long Island who's white. So it's not that I'm going to sit here and stereotype kids and put them in a box. But at the end of the day, I know kids who need an opportunity and they fit me because all I needed was an opportunity, you know. So being a head coach, a black head coach at the D3 level can be tough. It's a hard road to climb. So I want to go get players who also know it's a hard road to climb for them to get to a four-year school.
Yeah. And this is another narrative changing thing just because I feel like a lot of the teams we're playing right now or I've noticed in my 4 years is just like there's a lot of white people at this level. But now I feel like the narrative's kind of changing to where like black people before, I shouldn't say just black people, but people would, I'm only trying to go division one or division two. If it's division three, I'd rather just like not even play.
Yeah.
So now it's like those people that are on the cusp of, you know, am I a scholarship player or not? They're starting to come to the division three level. And you're seeing that like a lot of the rosters are now starting to at least incorporate a few black people or majority of their roster being black people. So I find that's super interesting. And one other thing I wanted to mention that was powerful is I like that mindset of at the JUCO level, like, let's not worry about what's in the past. Like, already as black people, we're starting behind. So if we're going to continue worrying about how far we're behind, then we're not really making much progress for the future. So
yeah, no, and I like that you have that perspective because I think a lot of times, you know, we've had to deal with so much, our culture, I should say, had to deal with so much. And how forward we're, you know, we're trying to move things. A lot of times when we keep playing victim or we keep looking back, it's hard to go forward. It really is because you're worried or you're concerned or you're complaining about all the unjust. And it's like, okay, we know it's there, but we got to keep pushing forward. We got to keep going along. We got to keep working because I think what happens is when we get into a box and we want to, you know, complain or play the victim, we stop working and we stop trying to move forward because we're so worried about someone who did us wrong. And believe me, I've had my share of wrongdoings, but if I always concerned myself with those, I wouldn't be in the seat I am now.
That's powerful, Coach. Moving along, so I noticed just looking at your roster real quick that like a lot of your players or your roster are black people. So I'm kind of curious, do you think that, like you know, or you mentioned that some of those kids, like they're only coming because you're the head coach. But I was wondering, do you notice like, I imagine you've coached under a white guy before. Like, is there a different buy-in? Because research suggests that, like, and even from personal experience, when all the kneeling and stuff was happening, I was debating, like, do I kneel or not? And then seeing, like, a white coach next to me, it's like, I don't really feel comfortable. I don't know how his perspective is on this. So, but if I had a brother next to me, I'd know that I would feel, like, just naturally confident to, you know, take that knee. So I'm curious, like, do you notice any specific difference in buy-in or trust just because you're in that first seat instead of like a white guy?
Yeah, I think it's a natural bias that cultures have to their own, right? It's just we understand each other a little bit more. We kind of have the same perspective on life a little bit more, you know, and that's a small sample. Obviously, the big scale, everyone's got different opinions. So, you know, I think when I was growing up, you were conditioned that these were coaches of basketball, white men. These are the guys who know the game, right? So you had a lot of, you know, black guys who wanted to play for him because they're like, well, he knows the game. He's coached at a high level. This guy is just working me out, or he hasn't been a head coach. I'm not going to trust him. I'm going to trust someone they show me on TV is what a coach is supposed to look like. So I think a lot of times you get used to that and it's conditioned, right? You're conditioned to that until you get older and you start understanding things more. But I think for me, working under, you know, different types of coaches, it really is the person, because I've worked with some white coaches who were really, really supportive of everything we go through and everything we're fighting to get through. And they supported kneeling or things of that nature. So I don't want to say that whole, you know, culture doesn't really like us, but I do think as a player, you're always going to be conditioned to go towards what you know. And a lot of times, if you have the same perspective, you come from the same background as someone, you're more comfortable being yourself and more comfortable doing the things you think are right because you trust that person in charge has your back. And I think if you are with someone who doesn't come from your culture, you probably do have to make sure you have a relationship for them, with them before you do so. And I think that was hard for me when I got into coaching, is my relationship with, you know, head white coaches was not always ideal because we saw things differently. We had different perspectives of the player. I always had an issue when I was growing up where you wouldn't go in inner cities. Like, I'm from New Jersey. So any inner city in New Jersey, all black schools, the basketball coach is white though. And it just, for whatever reason, I'm just like, okay, why couldn't black coaches coach in inner cities as well? Why were all of them white? Patrick schools, St. Benedict's, St. Anthony's. Like, you can go down the line of all these schools, St. Augustine, they all had white head coaches. The whole roster was black. You couldn't do the same. I couldn't go into a suburb and be a head coach of a all white school. It wouldn't work. The school, yeah. The parents, they wouldn't allow it, right?
So that's it's so crazy.
Right? So it's obviously you grow up in these double standards that you have to understand first before you can start having conversations about them. And then once you start understanding these double standards and how these things work, now, again, you have to put forth the work to earn your right and your craft. And like I've said, I actually did one of these interviews with one of the students here during Black History Month. And I said, all it really takes is someone in that room to look at me and see me as an equal and look at my resume instead of saying, OK, here's a white coach, here's a black coach. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people in this area, even outside of my school, probably think I was a DEI hire because I'm the first black coach to coach at Springfield. And it's unfortunate that that's the rumor, right? Like, but at the end of the day, I'm not worried about that because I know my kids and the kids I recruit here are coming here because they believe in what I do and I believe in them. And I think once you are a coach, your belief in that player is more important than your race. And that's unfortunate to say, but it is. It's true. If you believe in a kid and you show him you believe and you can put a progression in front of him and saying this is where we're going to get you to, then he's going to find that trust in you. And a lot of times it's the same, right? If it's two black, a black kid and a black coach, it'll work out where the white coach may be there for his benefit or he may be there for the purpose. A lot of the coaches in my conference here have great relationships with their players and they believe in those players. And these are mostly white coaches. Yeah. So I do think it can go both ways, but I do understand your point where a lot of times a black player will feel more supported if his coach is the same.
Yeah. I mean, talking along those lines, like the NUMAC conference is one of the few conferences with multiple black coaches, and that's just crazy in itself. So you and the MIT coach, Larry Anderson, he's a legend, but most of the coaches, everybody else is white to my perception, just looking at them.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious, like, what do you think is for this reason why there's so few black coaches in this division specifically? If you have any like solutions, just let's have this conversation of what the lack of diversity is about.
Yeah, first of all, Coach Larry Anderson is a legend and he's one of my mentors. I reached out to him. He's kind of gave me, you know, the book on how to handle, you know, being in New England and dealing with this because, you know, this is just one of those places where, you know, it's progressed, but it also still has a lot of, you know, negative history to it. So, you know, and I think one thing when you get into an environment like this, you have to learn how to navigate around, you know, people who may look at you differently. That's number one. And then once you get your foot in the door, you have to do everything you can to stand on that hill for people who look like yourself and say, we are capable. And in order to do that, you got to show you can recruit, you can build relationships with people, you can work with others in your community, and you can win games. But to get to that position of having one of those jobs, like I said, you need somebody in these offices to see you as an equal. And that's so tough, man. And I think the reason why D3, you know, a lot of times is not what you know is who you know, right? It's a lot of backdoor handshakes. There's a lot of people hiring friends. And you know, I know this guy from this way. And it's a billionaire's boys club, as they say on those T-shirts.
100%, yeah.
It's the same way in D3, man. It really is. And it's hard to put your foot in that door if you don't know anybody. Which is why I was super surprised I was even a candidate. I know no one up in New England, I know no one at Springfield College. I knew about Springfield College, but I was never coached. I knew no coaches in the area, nothing. I was blessed. And again, I'm a big believer in God. And I think he put me in this position because he know I'm going to do the most I can with my resources to help young African-American boys the best I can. And I don't know if everyone else can get that chance at this level. And it's so hard, especially in this area. Now, you go to New Jersey and the NJAC, there's a bunch of, you know, black coaches at Montclair. There was a couple at Keene at one point, you know, so they've been happening in certain areas. This area is just a tough area to break into. And I think the realization is no one's looking at resumes and what a person can do anymore. And everyone's really just kind of hiring friends or hiring people.
Network. Yeah.
Networking. Exactly. Exactly. And I think once we can get out of that and we start looking at a resume, you bring a gentleman in for an on-campus visit and an interview, you start to really know that, you know, we can do the same as everyone else. I think that's when we'll start pushing forward. But you need ADs and you need administrators who can do that, who are going to say, strip all the friends out, strip the networking out. Let's look at these resumes and compare these people by their work and by what they show in these interviews. And I think once we get to that point, then we'll see a lot more of us at the D3 level. And it's happening. It's getting there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I know the NESCAC, I think Tufts, Amherst.
Middlebury had it.
Yeah, he just retired. Yeah, so, you know, we're getting there. We're definitely getting there. And this guy's been there for a long time. So I'm excited for our future. But I think it's going to take some people in the admin buildings and the ADs to cut out that whole, you know, networking handshake stuff and really start, you know, interviewing people for, you know, what their merits are.
Yeah, that the NESCAC is an interesting conference just because, like, a lot of research shows that black coaches who are in these positions are getting, like, lower-level jobs. But the NESCAC is, like, you want those type of jobs. Yeah. And they got, I think, four coaches that are in the NESCAC. So that's interesting. But also, like, how we were talking about earlier, just naturally as a human, you're going to be a little bit biased towards your color.
Yeah.
So when these institutions are led or their athletic directors, administrations are led by white people, it's not a surprise when, you know, their white friends or their colored people are getting these jobs. So I definitely think it's not just like the black coaches need to get their foot in the door. It's also like we need more administration, people from the top. So exactly. I appreciate that, you know, information, that convo for sure.
Yeah, no, I think that's big. Once we can get some people in power, and it's not like we're going to get there and only hire our friends and network, but it's just showing that we are capable. And I think for our culture, all through life and all through times and years, all we've ever been able to say to people is, hey, we are capable to do all these things that you assume we cannot do because of whatever. You know, our neighborhoods aren't the greatest. Our education isn't the greatest. And we've been able to overcome all these things to reach heights in all industries. And some people still look at it as, oh, affirmative action, DEI, like they don't want to ever give us our credit. And I think that's the unfortunate part, that we never get the credit we deserve when we need it. You know, you'll hear it from these people on TV because they know it's a talking point. But in these closed doors and these small colleges and things of that nature, it's not really happening as much as we would like.
I really hope you guys stick around and everybody gets to hear this last one. Another really powerful conversation with Coach Edwin McGee. He just finished his first year coaching, head coaching at North Park. He was on staff before as associate head coach, but now he's the sole head coach. So, I mean, this conversation was really powerful, like I said. And it's kind of the same as Coach McLennan in the beginning, talking about, like, let's not look at the excuses. Let's not look at why we're behind. Like, let's just be as prepared as possible. I'm trying to get my guys as well coached as they can be. So again, like I said in the past one, I respect that. But also, something I never really thought about. I said in the intro, like, the reason why there's less Division III black players is because of the talent. Like, they want to play D1, D2. But he kind of challenged me on that, and my voice is cracked. But he challenged me on that, saying, basically, like, maybe, but it's also socioeconomics. And I never thought about that, but it's true. Like, when you think about Division III, if we're not getting scholarships, and there's a financial aid aspect, but you're talking about these private institutions. Like, I go to Alfred University, and before aid, the price is near, like, $50,000. And I'm blessed that I got scholarships and, like, academic scholarships, and my parents do good for themselves. Shout out to them. But, you know, someone from Troy, where I'm from, that, you know, their parents don't do as well as mine, they're not going to be able to afford to go to Alfred. So their possibility, they could have the same talent as me, but their possibility of attending Alfred or a private institution is way down because of that socioeconomic factor. And I'm glad that he kind of challenged me on that, because it opened my perspective, and I feel like I'm more educated because of that. So this really good conversation, and I like the ring of President Allison. So let's hear from Coach Edwin McGee, and we'll see you after that. All right, we are here with Coach McGee. How you doing today, Coach?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm chilling. Moving along, North Park plays in the CCIW, and it's a really, really good conference. But more what I want to talk about is, like, I'm looking at it right now. I believe you're the only black head coach in the conference. I'm looking at through some of the rosters. They're mostly white rosters. So I'm just kind of curious, like, how is year one, like, making connections, knowing I'm the only black coach? I know you were already in the conference, but just talk about, like, that difference of, you know, being around, maybe not unfamiliarity, but, you know, that they're different from you at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. It probably doesn't get talked about enough. But, yeah, no, I think I had established some relationships within the league prior to being the head coach. So that wasn't a huge transition, because a lot of these guys have been in the CCIW for years. I'm the rookie right now, right? The youngest dude, the youngest tenure wise, I would say.
I'm seeing like 15th year, 18th yeah. year, 12th year.
Yeah, yeah. So for me, man, it was I'm year one, so I'm like the baby of the group. But at the same time, it was I've had relationships with those guys before, seeing them on the road recruiting. A lot of times we're recruiting the same kids, and we see each other. We'll have conversations. So that transition wasn't anything that, you know, wasn't alarming or anything to that matter. I think the biggest thing or the difference is that just sometimes you see is, you know, not just in our league, but just in general at this level at times, is that, you know, we play a little bit of different style than a lot of teams, as you may know.
When we pulled up to North Park, we was not ready for that run and jump. I'm not trying to throw no shade, but them white kids was not ready for that.
So we play a little bit of different style, right? And you know, we look different too. So, you know, sometimes we and this is just I don't know maybe the landscape sometimes that, you know, we might get reffed a little differently because we are a little bit more aggressive. You know, our speed and our athleticism is a little different, where, you know, we get a lot of foul calls, and some might be questionable, some are right. So for us, right, it's just trying to navigate those things and navigate those conversations throughout the games, because ultimately you want your guys to have positive responses regardless of what's going on, especially being you know, black males that I have opportunity to coach a majority of the time, is that, hey man, you might not get, just to be honest, you might not get reffed the same way that guy's going to get reffed, right? So just making sure guys understand how to respond in certain situations, and myself as well. Like, I know I'm not going to get probably it's unfortunate, but I might not get the same type of calls that other guys might get. And, you know, for me, I try not to take that, you know, so personal. You know, sometimes it can be that, but I try not to take it personal. I just try to take it as I know I'm an animated dude on the sidelines. My eyes get big, my hands move around, right? I can be a little bit demonstrative. So for me, I was like, okay, it's more of my personality that might be getting me in these situations, right? Instead of what I look like. So I try to take that more so than anything when it comes to, you know, how we play and how we talk to our guys and how we communicate with the referees and other players and those things too. So, but no, it's different, man. It's, I'll say particularly the more that I've been in the Division III level, you know, the teams and the rosters look a lot different than if you look at the Division I levels, right? As far as like the team makeup, when it comes to those things. So it is different. And for me, I just try to make sure that we're always prepared and we know that we're trying to be as well coached as possible, because at the end of the day, for myself, it's not just me that I'm representing, in this position, right? As you know, like being the only, you know, Black head coach in the league, you know, I want to make sure that there's other guys that have these opportunities after me that might want to get into, you know, coaching at whatever level, and just making sure that we're representing ourselves in that way.
Yeah, I respect that a lot. I was just talking to the head coach at RIT about like a similar topic about, you know, like he wants to represent, not just like to know that Coach Parker knows how to coach, but also so that when he's done in his job, the next person, they're not saying, oh, this, the last time we had a Black head coach, he did A, B, and C wrong. It's like, nah, Coach Parker was one of the best coaches we had. So just getting that cycle so that the influx of more Black coaches can start to be apparent. I think that's really special about the community that doesn't really like get talked about a lot. And I like also referencing another coach I talked to, just talking about like, as Black people, we focus a lot about, you know, why we're not getting these calls or why life isn't good, instead of just like, how can we be better so that like we don't have to even worry about what the ref is doing to us. Like, let's just keep moving forward, focus on how we can be the best Black people. So that's tough, Coach.
I think you hit that's a lot of good stuff that you're talking about, because it's not just in coaching that we're dealing with these things. It's everyday life, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, you want to make sure that when you are stepping into a role and you have an opportunity to lead, and have an opportunity to showcase your abilities and your talents, that you're doing so with the utmost respect and a high quality. Because again, like you said, like it's a lot of times that it's subconscious, right? Like we want to make sure that we're setting us up for better, right? And not just my family and my immediate, you know, people that I touch on a daily basis, but the people that I might not know that might need another opportunity, right? They need to see these type of, need to see our faces in these type of roles and leadership roles where we're not just here, but we're excelling as well.
Mm, yeah, 100%. And one other thing I was going to touch on real quick is just like how a lot of the rosters or like teams in Division III, they're made up of white people. It makes sense in a way, but I think it's also kind of changing just because like at the higher divisions, I don't know if this is crazy to say, but Black people are like known to be better at basketball than white people. So they're getting all these like higher division, like Division I players are mostly Black players, while Division III players who may not be as good are like these white kids. But I do think the narrative is starting to change around Division III. Like it might make the most sense for your long-term career if you can still hoop at a high level, but it's setting you up the next 10, 20, 30 years. So it's definitely good points to hit.
I think the biggest thing, and I think it's more so with the more that I've been in it, it's more the socioeconomic part of it that gets overlooked. Mm-hmm. Because there are, you know, the rosters that do make up, you know, predominantly, you know, white rosters, the socioeconomic status might be a little different than the makeup of other teams, right? Like my team as well. Like, you know, and I'm not saying that, you know, it varies throughout our roster the same thing. Like we have some guys that have, you know, their parents do really, really well. And then there's some other guys that, you know, parents, you know, are working, you know, two jobs or whatever that is to make things work. Like, so it's different on our roster as well. But I think that's the biggest difference as well when it comes to what the roster makeup looks like. I think it's more so in the socioeconomic status as well, which can play into, you know, race and those things in a holistic sense, just based off the history of what this country is. But I think that's another piece too that sometimes doesn't get talked about enough, when it comes to kind of what the roster is and you know, the type of kids that we have opposed to some type of kids that other institutions have and those things too.
Obviously, there's a lack of diversity in Division III head coaching roles. I have a list of all the conferences and like every coach in the conference, their race. And I might share it with you after, but it's like, it's pretty discouraging, like, to be honest. But I'm just kind of curious, like, what's your thoughts regarding like the reasons behind this? Maybe it's like, if you want to talk about institutional hiring, interest in the division, whatever you want to bring it, like, I just want to hear your thoughts on why this is.
Yeah, I think if you even look at it in a broader sense, right, like even if you look at it at all levels, I think there's a disparity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just think it shows more, it shows up more at this level. Like I said, based just off the, I think, again, the type of coaches that are able to recruit socioeconomic, different socioeconomic statuses and those things. But I also think too, which is probably the biggest issue, is the administration roles, right? Like, and not as far as not good, not bad administration, but diverse administration.
I was just saying this.
I think if you look, even in our, I don't think there's not one minority athletic director in our league, right? If you look at probably, I don't know, the WIAC, which is right, you know, right next to us, I don't think there's one minority athletic director in the league. So it starts from the top, right? Like, if we can get to a point where there are more minority faces or, you know, Black faces, whatever that looks like in these positions of decision-making power, is when we're going to have more opportunities for you know, guys like myself to be able to have an opportunity to maybe head coach or be in a situation or a possibility to be in a leadership role on campus. But it starts from that part, right? We have to have more representation at that level first, which will allow for us to have more representation underneath.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about like how that would work, it's sad just because we're like just thrown into the system. But if you break down the system, okay, how are we going to get more people in these AD roles? Okay, we would need like someone above them to be in that position. And then who's above that person is also a white person. And then you get ultimately to the framework or the groundwork of the system. And it's like, I don't want to say it's impossible because I have faith and hope that it one day might change. But if you like realistically thinking, it's basically impossible that even getting to that AD role is impossible. So I definitely agree with what you say. We need more people, but it's a tough challenge to get over.
100%. I think that's another conversation, right? And you could probably have another whole episode about just that alone. You know, having more of that representation at that level above athletic departments as well. Like it's really about the decision makers, right? Like who are making the ultimate decisions and how can we have more representation in the decision making, which will allow for, you know, cause now it's not like, man, I could be like Coach McGee, right? But now it's like, we need some, man, now we could be like President Allison.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's where we got to get to. And then that's what will start allowing things to kind of trickle down to the rest of the departments and those things.
So big thank you to all you guys for listening, but also huge shout out to the four coaches that you just heard from. They didn't have to do that. And it was really good talking to them, knowing that now I have them as a connection. So I appreciate you guys. And my final thoughts is just that, like, yes, this is a huge issue, but I do think that it's changing just a little bit, even if it's not to an extreme extent, it's definitely changing. So we're like, if you look 10, 20 years ago, you might have seen zero head coaches that are Black. But now that we're seeing some, and I bet this offseason we're going to see more Black head coaches get hired. So as long as that we're continuing to improve, we can't be perfect. Like we are thrown into a country that was built upon, you know, the work of minorities, and those minorities were starting way at the bottom. And as long as we're trying to keep pushing them up a little bit to kind of even the playing field, then I think we're heading in the right direction. I won't say the country as a whole, but at least in the sports aspect. So, like I said, I appreciate you guys listening. I didn't mean to step on anyone's toes or offend anyone, but that's my project. And thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro. That was a fire episode.
OD.